Thank you, Candace. This impromptu on WFMT is supported in part by a grant from the Elizabeth F. Cheney Foundation, a Chicago-based philanthropy dedicated to arts and culture, and by generous gifts from members of the WFMT Fine Arts Circle. For this impromptu, we have with us violinist Philip Quint and pianist Marta Aznavourian for a program celebrating the birthday of Astor Piazzolla. The Argentinian master of the Nuevo Tango was born on this date in 1921. And our artists have chosen music by composers who played a significant role in Piazzolla's creative life, namely Bach, Stravinsky, and Debussy. But of course, we'll also hear music by Piazzolla himself. Philip and Marta are able to do this for us because they're doing a more expansive version of what we're going to hear today for the Stradivari Society at the Women's Athletic Club of Chicago. That takes place next Wednesday, March 16th. So to music, and I won't tell you what we're about to hear. It's a big secret. All right, Philip, so what were they plotting for there? What was that?
It's time to reveal the big secret. What you just heard is a work by Astor Piazzolla, the young Astor Piazzolla.
About when? 1940s?
About 1940s, yeah, somewhere, some 1943, maybe. This is his preludio for violin and piano number one. Nobody knows if there is a preludio number two or number three. I think it stopped with number one. Mm-hmm. I certainly was not able to discover any more preludios. And this is Piazzolla's first journey into classical music. This is what he wanted to do as an aspiring young composer, bandoneonist. He wanted to write pieces that were of classical nature and really tried to model the works after his great inspirations in life, which at the time were Ginastera, Debussy, Bach, Stravinsky, Bartok, and many others. Some of them are coming to this birthday party today, later on, so you will hear them.
So let's rewind a bit and go back to, let's say, the 1930s, when he, I guess it was maybe 1929 or so, when he was very young and he got his first bandoneon from his father, and he began getting very serious about music. He was playing everywhere, and something of a sensation at that time, even as a kid on that instrument. But the idea of writing didn't, you know, quite come to him yet, but very soon. And he started playing piano, started studying with Bela Vilda, who was a student of Rachmaninoff. And it was through him, I guess.
And a Hungarian.
Yes, that's right. And through him, he became very interested in Bach.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to hear next. So tell us about that, this piece that you've chosen.
The next piece, well, in a preludio, as you may have heard, as the violin plays a certain pattern and the piano plays a certain pattern. The piano part sounds a little bit like Ginastera, but the violin line sounds very much like Bach. So I purposely chose the first movement of Bach's Sonata number 4 for violin and harpsichord. First of all, it's derived from one of the greatest Bach's works of all times, called Erbarme Dich from St. Matthew's Passion. But you will notice that the violin line does a very similar pattern as the works that you just heard by Piazzolla.
So this is the Sicilienne from the Bach Sonata number 4 in C minor. Thank you. violinist Philip Quint and pianist Marta Aznavourian in music of Bach from the Sonata No. 4 in C minor. For violin and keyboard, we heard the Largo or Sicilienne. So into the 1940s now, and he's studying with Ginastera and kind of wondering what his voice is going to be like as a composer, but he's still not sure. And he has a number of orchestras that he's involved with and doing very well, but still there's that inquiring mind. And something else has to happen. He doesn't know quite what. And he's comparing various composers, among them Stravinsky. And you're going to play a very interesting piece by Stravinsky. We don't know whether or not this influenced Piazzolla. Maybe not, actually. Well, it's a pretty weird kind of tango.
It is an odd piece, like a lot of Stravinsky's music, right. You know. And you know, this is a very important point in Piazzolla's life, as you have mentioned. It's about 1954, and he is looking for a very unique individual voice, and he feels that now he has enough knowledge to put it all together, but doesn't quite know how. So his dream is really to go to Paris and to study with Nadia Boulanger, who is still working there, and to possibly meet Stravinsky himself. So he goes to Paris and he meets with Nadia, and he plays for her his compositions, and she says, "Well, it's really nice music. It sounds like Debussy. It sounds like Fauré. It sounds like Franck. Where is Piazzolla?" And he got very shy, and he just kind of mumbled that, "Well, you know, all I have done is I just played, you know, tangos in nightclubs in Argentina, all kinds of different tango music and tango orchestras." And she says, "Well, why don't you play some of that for me?" So he played his works, and then, according to Astor, she questioned me as if she was a KGB agent about my life, about what else I'm doing, about what I love. And she said, "Well, Astor, this is, you know, a great moment in your life. You know, it's so wonderful that we have met, but it's time for you to go back to Argentina and develop your style." So at this point, we really don't know if he has met Stravinsky. But I'm just imagining what an incredible time it was in Paris, 1940s, 1950s, I think especially, yeah, after the war. You have Matisse, you have Picasso, you have Dalí smoking his pipe in a French bistro. You have this, you know, French Renaissance really going on. So it must have been overwhelming and inspiring. So I just imagine that he walked into some nightclub, and Samuel Dushkin, to whom Stravinsky wrote a lot of pieces and who, you know, took great part in this little tango as well, was performing this tango, and it just all merged together in Astor's head as, "This is what I'm going to do."
Thank you.
Igor Stravinsky's Tango from 1940, which actually was written in the United States, by the way. It was written when he was in Hollywood. And actually, he was a little short on money, and this was a piece that he wrote so he could get some royalties quickly, and he put it out in a number of arrangements.
Well, he was a very savvy man.
Yes, he was. He really was. But it's quite possible that, you know, it influenced Piazzolla in some way. This next music you're going to play for us definitely did, I would think, in terms of the rather exotic harmonies and impressionistic stuff that goes on in it, music of Debussy. And, well, tell us about that and how you think that would have affected him.
Well, for me, this Clair de Lune from Suite Bergamasque is a very clear, well, Piazzolla's homage with his Oblivion. You know, it's one of the most well-known tunes of Piazzolla that you hear all the time, which goes...
Oh, yes.
And so on. So this is, you know, a beautiful melody, which is very indicative of the, you know, French impressionist school and, you know, works of, you know, Ravel and Debussy, Fauré and Franck, all the, you know, predecessors to Debussy as well. So I think Piazzolla really adapted that in his melodic lines throughout many, many works, but particularly in Clair de Lune.
Let's hear it. Clair de Lune, it's from the Suite Bergamasque of Debussy. Thank you. Philip Quint and Marta Aznavourian in Debussy's Clair de Lune, the third piece of the suite Bergamasque. And we're going to have Piazzolla to end, but before we do, Phil, you're actually working with your own sort of tango band, aren't you? Tell us a bit about that.
That's correct. About 6 years ago, I was thrown into this very unprecedented arrangement for me, which is a chamber music concert with bandoneon, with piano, double bass, and electric guitar. And I looked at the program, what I had to learn, and I saw a few works of Piazzolla. And I thought to myself, well, I've always wanted to play some Piazzolla. So we did the concert. I fell in love with the music. I thought it was just absolutely fantastic. And literally the next day, I started looking up Argentinian musicians in New York. I Googled a few and I started contacting them and I said, I want to put together a band. I want to play this music on a regular basis. So little by little, we assembled the first cast of the group and I started to get in touch with different players and started to incorporate dancers in my concert. So it's hard to imagine, but it's now been almost 6 years that I've been actually playing with this group, which is aptly named the Quint Quintet. I thought, why not abuse my last name? It's convenient for the quintet.
Are there any recordings you guys have put out?
We are actually planning to release our very first live recording in a few months. So I'm very excited about that. Okay. And I also, you know, I want to also mention something about the instrument bandoneon,
yeah,
which is really quite interesting, you know, and Piazzolla, I think, really made it into what it is today, which is, you know, a rather solo instrument. You hear a lot of bandoneon players now playing solo. It's all, I think, thanks to Piazzolla. It's a very odd little instrument. It looks like accordion and it sounds like accordion, but it's nothing like it. Bandoneon was actually originated in Germany, and it was sort of a mini organ, but the way the instrument was laid out, it was very bizarre. In fact, I think Piazzolla said that it's very diabolical instrument because nothing makes sense. You have buttons on both ends of the instrument and you have to push and pull like accordion. So the player actually needs to learn four keyboards at the same time, because you know when you push it's one note, but when you pull it's already another note. So I think that's why Germans send it to Argentina.
What else is going on for you in the near future?
Oh, well, I would love Marta.
I want Marta to talk about her stuff too. But
all right. Well, I'll start. Absolutely. Well, there's a lot of exciting events. You know, I've been doing a lot of different things. You know, I expanded, you know, aside from the Quint Quintet, you know, I also just released a CD which is called Bach 21. And 21 does not stand for the number of children that Bach had. And he did have about 20, by the way, for the record. And it's Bach 21, just the way Bach could be heard in 21st century. So my friend, brilliant composer and arranger, Matt Herskovitz, just did a reimagination of Bach's work in a very sort of a jazz fusion. It's quite interesting. So this is one of the projects. And then, you know, the rest of the things, you know, I'm working a lot with bringing classical music and talking about classical music and being an ambassador for classical music. Yeah. I think it's a huge responsibility. I recently did an interesting project by interviewing New Yorkers about, random New Yorkers about classical music.
I saw it, yeah, on YouTube.
Yes, it's on YouTube. You know, things that are surrounding us, you know, I think it's very important to keep music programs and arts in schools, you know, so, and I frequently face, you know, a lot of places where those programs are cut, and I you know, I just want to thank this wonderful group and everybody that are supporting us. This is a good cause. This is very important. So, and the rest of the stuff is, you know, a bunch of concerts and, right, you know, concertos and, you know, like...
You're busy. We get the idea.
Yeah.
Marta, tell us what you're doing. Lincoln Trio,
yes,
DePaul.
Well, we have, again, concerts coming up, and online you can find them. But the trio is playing the Beethoven Triple at Northwestern with the Chicago Philharmonic, and that is April 3rd. And then I'm playing with the New Philharmonic Orchestra, playing Poulenc, two piano concerto with Winston Choi, and Ravinia on April 30th with another fine violinist, Yosef Ivanov. And you can somehow, hopefully, find tickets to all those things online. Marta's, you know, whatever, .com. Ravinia.org. All those, you'll find it. If you find me on Facebook.
Right.
But, yes. But should I talk more? We discussed Piazzolla? Or
well, yeah,
Grand
let's
Tango?
Talk. Let's get back to Piazzolla. Yeah, well, that's a good thing to do.
How did you get into Piazzolla?
Well, I've been playing it with the trio, and I, of course, I played Oblivion. I've always played with it, but the man itself, I love this idea of incorporating these, all his influences, because to understand who he is as a person, you really see a whole different side of what this music means. You know, he was such a good, he was such a fine worker of his craft, and there's a tension to his music, and I think it's because there was a tension amongst himself with his desire to merge, quote, sophisticated classical music with the tango music. You know, he really tried to, he went one way with classical, he really respected it and wanted to perfect it, and then he was, of course, drawn back to his tango roots, and he worked so diligently into combining the two together to really make quite a sophisticated tango, actually. You know, he created a very unique rhythmic, rhythmical 3-3-2, ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-ba-ba. You know, I can, you know, demonstrate it. You'll hear it all through his music, particularly in the, you know, the Grand Tango that we're performing next. But he uses complex harmonies and, his, of course, his unique rhythm and a lot of counterpoint and dissonance, you know, a lot of this, the sound that you've been hearing throughout the afternoon, actually.
Yeah.
So it's just a wonderful thing to unify his whole life and hear it.
I think a testament to just how successful he was is the fact that this is really pure music and it can be played by any kind of instrumentation.
Yes.
You know, despite the fact that he wrote originally for his quintet.
Yes, but, yes.
And I think it works with any instruments.
Yeah, and the thing is that we were just discussing this with Martha yesterday. I think most musicians feel that they know how to play Piazzolla, right, and this is the right way and this is the only way. Yeah. And I was thinking, why is it? It's not so easy. In fact, in the last 6 years, I had to unlearn most of my Juilliard training so I can learn how to play Piazzolla. And, you know, I learned it from, you know, my partners in the quintet, you know, that told me how to play the, you know, effects, what is the style, what is the articulation, you know, how to do all of that stuff. But I think it all comes down to the fact that everyone relates to this music.
Mm-hmm.
His implementation of tango, jazz, klezmer, rock, pop, everything is there.
Right.
Everyone finds something that they can hear in his music. So it's really, as a lot of Argentinian players would say, it's a music for your soul.
Right. And it's not easy to play. You know, it's, you have to be quite a good reader, quite a good musician, and yet play it in a very jazzy, relaxed, improvisational style. So, you know, it's not easy, but it's very energetic and very passionate and very, you know, I think he was a very particularly, how would you, he's not an angry man, but quite stern and quite, what's a good adjective for him?
Well, his musicians and his family like to describe him as a difficult man.
Difficult.
I guess
difficult was
is
the word.
Is that the
I'm
word you were looking for?
Yes, that could quite be, and I see that a lot in his music, yet there's an endearing quality about it, him and his music as well. And it's quite lovely to play.
He was a perfectionist. I think that's what it was. He was never happy with what's going on. He was an unbelievably hard worker. You know, he really just spent hours and hours composing since he was a kid till the very last days of his life. And it really shows. The volume of works that Piazzolla has, and now, of course, it all expanded because, as you have mentioned, it's now been arranged for every instrument. Right. You even hear Piazzolla in disco clubs. You hear in some places where you would not ordinarily hear classical music or tango music, but it's now all reworked, remixed, and you hear, I recognize those pieces when I, travel, and it's great.
Well, thus far we've heard a number of pieces which influenced him. Now we're going to hear a piece where it all comes together. This is his mature style, and the piece was actually written for cello and piano, written for Mstislav Rostropovich to perform in the 1980s, and it's the Grand Tango. And maybe you can tell us a bit about this before we hear it.
Well, the story goes that Rostropovich had no idea that Piazzolla wrote it for him. Apparently, Astor came up to Rostropovich at one of the concerts, and at that time, I think he was not as well known, or maybe he was. But it's kind of a backstage meet and greet. Here is my score. Please take a look at it. And I think Rostropovich just brought it home and put it somewhere.
It was about a decade before he actually got to it.
And this is why.
Yeah.
This is why, because he was going through his old piles, some boxes, and suddenly he picks up this work that says dedicated to Mstislav Rostropovich. It was probably a huge box of other pieces,
which
said the same things, had the same inscription.
No doubt.
And he looked at it and he's like, oh, I should play this piece. It is written for me. And I think, Piazzolla's name was already really circling in the classical music world, mm-hmm. thanks to Gidon Kremer,
right.
who was really the trailblazer in that sense to bring Piazzolla to wider audiences.
Well, let's hear it then. The Grand Tango by Astor Piazzolla with Philip Quint and Marta Aznavourian. Thank you. Violinist Philip Quint and pianist Marta Aznavourian. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of this live impromptu on WFMT. Our thanks to our musicians for being with us today to celebrate the 95th anniversary of Astor Piazzolla's birth. And they'll be doing so in more expanded form for the Stradivari Society next Wednesday, March 16th, at the Women's Athletic Club of Chicago. Thanks also to our music producer, Mary Mazurek, and the producer of Impromptu, Louise Frank. Also thanks to Michael Sangambino for turning pages for Marta. And also thanks to our audience here at WFMT, made up of great Fine Arts Circle members. This Impromptu on WFMT was supported in part by a grant from the Elizabeth F. Cheney Foundation, the Chicago-based philanthropy dedicated to arts and culture, and by generous gifts from members of the WFMT Fine Arts Circle. If you enjoyed this live performance, please become a sustaining member today. Ongoing monthly contributions are one of the most effective ways to support the station. It's quick, it's easy. You can become a sustaining member now and at some point in the future be a member of this audience by pledging online at WFMT.com. Thanks again, everyone. Candace?